You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Making contact.
Amy Gastelum, you're listening to Making Contact. This week, we're following up on a story about self-managed abortion that we produced last spring. A lot has changed since then, and we're here to catch you up. That said, post-Roe abortion care access is changing daily in the U.S. right now. And this story is being produced for broadcast in April 2024. Things may have changed by the time you hear it.
After the Arizona Supreme Court upheld a Civil War-era abortion ban on Tuesday, Democrats in the state legislature tried to open debate on a bill that would repeal the 1864 law, but they were blocked by Republicans, who cut them off and quickly adjourned for the week. It led to this chaotic scene on the State House floor.
All in favor of that motion, vote aye.
Aye.
All opposed, vote no. Ayes have it, so ordered.
Arizona recently joined several other states severely restricting abortion care, mostly in the South and Midwest. Since the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision overturned Roe v. Wade in June 2022, access to legal abortion care has varied widely depending on the region of the country. Some states, like California, have protected legal access to abortion care by making it part of their state constitution. Other states, like Indiana, where I live, have created bans so restrictive it's almost impossible to qualify for a legal abortion here. But networks for helping people find abortion care are robust and, in many ways, growing.
Hi, this is Jess from All Options and the Hoosier Fund.
You may remember Jessica Marchbank from the story on self-managed abortion we published last year. She's the state programs director at All Options Pregnancy Resource Center in Bloomington, Indiana. In this recording from 2023, she's in her office on the phone, following up with someone who needed funds for her abortion care.
Oh, good. Are you all set? You don't need any additional financial assistance? Okay. Oh, that's fantastic. I'm really, really happy to hear that. If anything changes, don't hesitate to get in touch and we'll be here, okay?
At the time, Jess would often refer callers like this to clinics in Indiana for care, but not anymore. Indiana's abortion ban went into effect in August 2023. There are a few narrow exemptions, but the law is so restrictive that abortion clinics like Planned Parenthood and Whole Woman's Health aren't providing abortion care in Indiana at all. I am curious, you know, in terms of the logistics. I mean, since August 2023, like, how has that affected your work? What's changed?
I mean, in some ways, it's really simple and very little has changed. And of course, in other ways, everything has changed because now the vast majority of people are not going to be able to access an abortion within the state they live in.
It's a huge blow, but it wasn't a walk in the park before the ban went into effect.
So, leading up to the ban taking effect in Indiana, access to abortion care in-state had gotten pretty bad.
Rules like gestational age limits, mandatory counseling, and laws aimed at restricting how clinics operate already made it hard to get an abortion in Indiana. The Hoosier Abortion Access Study showed that even before the ban, about 1 in 4 Hoosiers who needed an abortion were already traveling out of state for care. Now it's even worse in Indiana. I'll just say that I looked at Abortion Finder, you know, to see like, okay, if I'm 6 weeks pregnant, you know, where do I need to go? Like, how can I do this? And it was such a fascinating journey to be like, okay, well, the closest clinic to me is in Cincinnati, but
you'll have to go there twice.
You have to go there twice. Yeah. I can't be a minor. But if I go to Champaign, everything changes. If I go west to Illinois, I can be a minor and I don't have to do the counseling.
Right.
And it's up to, I think, 24 weeks gestation, whereas in Ohio, it's 22.
Right.
So it was like, wow. I mean, east or west makes a huge difference.
Oh, it definitely does. A lot of our callers are from the Indianapolis area.
Mm.
So right off the top of my head, if they say they're going to Dayton, we always, clinic choice is always up to the individual, but we want to make sure that they have all of the information. So it's almost, depending on where they are in Indianapolis, it could be almost the same distance between them and Dayton and them and Champaign. Sometimes they'll say, well, you know, Champaign's 5 miles farther away. And I'll say, but you only have to go there once. and that really does make a huge difference to a lot of folks. Sometimes they'll choose to go even further and go up to Chicago because there are numerous clinics in Chicago. And sometimes it's easier to get a fast appointment up that way, even if it means they're driving farther.
This running around to find abortion health care is more than many people can do. In-clinic abortion care costs a lot, around $600, and often requires time off from work. Childcare and transportation are also major barriers for some. Forcing people to travel further for care means some folks just aren't going to get it. And as Jess said, these barriers have existed long before the Dobbs decision in 2022.
Yes, Roe gave us the legal protection to get an abortion, to have an abortion. But, you know, so many people did not have real access to abortion, right?
Dr. Melissa Madeira is a researcher and consultant on lots of projects related to abortion access. She says people who have the hardest time getting care are those who live far from a city, are marginalized by gender identity, race, or immigration status.
And many people, many people do not have the financial ability to access abortion. So we have to really think about that. Yes, Roe gave us legal access to abortion, but it didn't actually give us all access to abortion all the time whenever we needed it. I think what's really important to think about is that we need multiple avenues to abortion care. Not one way is the right way for everyone, right? And even in states where abortion is still accessible, and I hate using the word legal or, you know, talking about legalities because I don't want to give the law any real legitimacy because it's not legitimate. Like this is not legitimate, right? And so we need various ways, various avenues for people to access abortion. And we should start thinking about how do we construct that for the day in which everyone in every state will be able to access abortion or have legal access to abortion. Again, using the word legal.
The problem of legal abortion care access is old. It's older than Dobbs. It's older than Roe. But self-managed abortion is also old. People have been managing their own abortions for thousands of years using herbs, teas, and other methods passed down from families and cultural traditions. These days, self-managed abortion is usually done using the same meds that doctors use for abortions, mifepristone and misoprostol. In 2022, the World Health Organization stated outright that it's safe for a person to manage their own first trimester abortion without a clinician's help. Whether you get these pills in person from a doctor or order them online, the effect is the same. Here's how it works.
There are two types of abortion available, surgical and medical. In this video, we will focus on medical abortion. Medical abortion, often referred to as the abortion pill, is a safe and effective way of ending a pregnancy. The pill is usually taken within the first 12 weeks of gestation. The whole process can take up to 2 weeks to complete, although most women feel normal again after just 2 days. Depending on the method, it can be up to 98% effective. How does it work? Medical abortion can consist of two types of medication, mifepristone and misoprostol. Using a combination of both is the most effective method. Mifepristone works by blocking progesterone, a hormone necessary to maintain a pregnancy, while misoprostol works by causing the uterus to contract and empty. The combination method requires 1 mifepristone pill followed by 4 misoprostol pills 24 to 48 hours later. If mifepristone is not available, misoprostol can be taken on its own. This method is slightly less effective. When taking misoprostol alone, 12 pills are to be taken within a 12-hour period. 4 every 3 hours is the recommended procedure to follow. What can you expect from a medical abortion? Misoprostol causes cramping and bleeding to empty the uterus. It can feel like a heavy period, and it's not uncommon to pass large blood clots during the process. Side effects can include diarrhea and vomiting, tiredness, mild fever or chills, headaches, and dizziness. To ease pain and discomfort, some of the following may help. Staying at home or in a comfortable space when taking the pills, taking ibuprofen or painkillers before the procedure, having a hot bath or shower, ensuring a friend or family member present to help reassure and comfort you, having an emergency plan in place for any potential complications. Urgent medical advice will need to be sought if you experience excess heavy bleeding, if more than 2 pads are filled per hour for 2 hours, intense pain, continuous vomiting, a fever of higher than 38 degrees Celsius that persists for longer than 12 hours. What happens next? This will depend on each woman's individual experience. Most women can expect tiredness, cramping, and bleeding for a few days. Within 24 to 48 hours, most women feel fine to return to their daily routine. Although it is not essential, it is advisable to plan a follow-up appointment with a health provider 2 weeks after the procedure. They can confirm if the process was successful and discuss your contraceptive options. What happens to periods? Periods should return to normal 4 to 6 weeks after taking the pills. If it does not return, a pregnancy test should be taken to confirm there are no longer signs of a pregnancy. How soon can sex be resumed? Sex can be resumed as soon as you feel ready. Pregnancy can happen soon after medical abortion, so it is advisable to talk with a health provider about the right contraception for you. To find out more information on the options available in your nearest clinic, please visit www.ippf. You can also visit www.womenonweb.org for further information on medical abortion.
While traditional in-clinic abortion care is increasingly difficult across the U.S., activists around the country are working to get people the care they need, especially in the form of pills. One online hub is plancpills.org. Here's Dr. Melissa Madera again. She's helped the organization with some research projects.
2015, that's when Plan C was founded. Yeah, so it's been a long time. I mean, before the access issues got the worst, which is right now. 7 years ago, right? We're in 2023 now. They were thinking, the co-founders were thinking, like, how can we let people know more about abortion pills online? Because people have been doing this and using abortion pills on their own, self-managing in other countries for many, many years. So the thought was, this is something that's happening globally. People in the U.S. should also know about it, because we all know that even though we had the right to an abortion, many people didn't have access to abortion. So the question is, how can we get more access to people? And abortion pills is one of those ways. It's been a long time that this team has been working on making sure that people know how to access abortion pills online and to manage their abortion safely. And it's the most comprehensive guide to abortion pills on the interwebs. So you can go online and search very specifically for your state. They give you information on where to get pills, how to order them, and then resources around if you have questions about the medical aspects of things while you're self-managing, if you have questions about the legal aspects of things, also resources for those.
Here in Indiana, if I go to plancpills.org, I can order pills online from Aid Access, Abuzz, and Cambridge Reproductive Health Consultants. If I choose one of these, I would receive virtual support from a clinician if I need it, and it costs around $150. No travel necessary. But there are also 25 other sites listed. Some provide abortion pills for as little as $0. That's right, free 99. Those sites do not offer clinician support. But plancpills.org also links out to the miscarriage and abortion hotline, a phone and text hotline staffed by abortion care providers. Here's Dr. Madera again.
And for some people, like, they want to use these pills and they are like, oh, I know it's safe and I can do this on my own. Some people are like, well, I don't really want to do that. And you know what? It also has to do with your circumstances, right? Because if you are someone who can't take days off of work, or feel like, you know, I really have to like be home with my kids, you might want to go to a clinic, get a procedure and go back home and it's done, right? And so one of the most important things to me is like, we need to trust people, right? To make the right decision that is good for them based on their own circumstances, right? So people are going to make their decisions based on like how much money I have, where I live, can I take time off of work? I have kids. You know, it's like there's so many ways in which people have to like come to this decision on their own. And we need to respect that and give them all the options so they can do the right thing for them.
Self-managed abortion isn't for everyone, but PlanCPills.org fills a gap and proves a movement. It shows that folks are still working hard to get abortion care to people who need it. Other sites like the Repro Legal Helpline and AbortionFinder.org also help people navigate this confusing time. But none of these sites can replace what local abortion funds do in terms of boots on the ground. Local orgs know the laws in their states. They create networks between each other to get their people's needs met. They even advocate at the local legislative level. After the Dobbs decision, All Options was part of the group that sued the state of Indiana over an abortion ban. That action led to an injunction that lasted until August 2023. That meant abortion care could continue for about a year. It gave networks a chance to plan how to operate after the ban would go into effect. Here's Jess from All Options in Bloomington again.
So if we back up 2 years in time, oh, let's go back to that, shall we?
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
2 years ago, right. Well, it still wasn't a walk in the park, but 2 years ago, we as the All Options Hoosier Abortion Fund, I think we had working relationships with maybe 20 different abortion care providers, mostly in Indiana, and then a few in like Illinois, Ohio, Michigan, and then like the DuPont Clinic and a clinic in Colorado. And we were in partnership with other regional abortion funds, but not, it was more allyship, but we didn't really work closely together. So between the Dobbs ruling and until our ban took effect, we really just doubled down on making sure that we were really well connected to everyone we needed to be connected to. So we now have working relationships with over 60 abortion care providers in 9 different states.
Wow.
So I believe we're working with every single clinic in Illinois, most in Michigan, most in Ohio, and the majority of Hoosiers really are going to Illinois at this point, but plenty still go to Ohio and Michigan. We're really fortunate to really build those relationships with the other abortion funds. And my heart just feels really full when I think about how we can lean on each other. The Chicago Abortion Fund, Kentucky Health Justice Network, Abortion Fund of Ohio, and Midwest Access Coalition. We have like private signal groups with all of the different funds. We have ways to reach out directly to say, hey, we're supporting this caller who needs extensive support. We can do this much. Can you do the rest?
Meaning funding.
Funding and practical support, childcare, meals, rides, hotels, mm-hmm. things like that.
So there are volunteers helping with these kinds of things, or is it like more funding?
Sometimes volunteers, sometimes it's cash assistance or a gas card.
Okay.
A Lyft or Uber. Depends on the region and whatever fund is working with them. We are still, because we are small, we are focused on abortion funding, procedural funding. We don't really have the capacity to do more like cash assistance right now. But even so, for years and years, the Chicago Abortion Fund and Midwest Access Coalition have already been covering Indiana with that type of support,
yeah,
and doing it well. You know, they have the infrastructure already. And I appreciate them so much because going into this year, we knew that we wouldn't be able to sustain the level of funding that we had through, like, from mid-2022 until really until the ban took effect in August of 23, mm-hmm. we were flooded with unprecedented levels of donations. That's what allowed us to go from funding 30 people a month to for a couple of months, hundreds of people in a month. Mm-hmm. It was because we had more money. Those donations have dwindled. People have stopped rage giving. I think a lot of Americans think, oh, the crisis is over. Like, what more really can be done? Which is like, no, the crisis is not over. And in fact, in some ways, it's really just getting going.
I'm Salima Hamrani. You're listening to Making Contact and a story about self-managed abortion in the United States. If you like today's show and want more information, or if you'd like to leave us a comment, visit us at radioproject.org, where you can access today's show and all of our prior episodes. And now, back to the show with Amy Castellan.
We will hear argument this morning in case 23-235, the Food and Drug Administration versus Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine and the consolidated case. General Preliger.
In March, the Supreme Court heard opening arguments in a case that could make it illegal for anyone to use mifepristone for abortion care, including providers in states where abortion is legal. Remember, mifepristone blocks the hormone progesterone, essentially ending a pregnancy. Misoprostol causes cramping that empties the uterus. It is possible to use misoprostol alone for an abortion, but it's more effective to use both drugs.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, FDA approved mifepristone based on the agency's scientific judgment that the drug is safe and effective. It's maintained that judgment across five presidential administrations, and millions of Americans have used mifepristone to safely end their pregnancies. Respondents may not agree with that choice, but that doesn't give them Article III standing or a legal basis to upend the regulatory scheme.
If the Food and Drug Administration loses this case, abortion care for everyone will change dramatically. More than half of all abortions performed in the U.S. are done using mifepristone and misoprostol. Meanwhile, local abortion funds are working this issue from all angles, leaning on one another. They're advocating at legislative levels. All Options has sued the state. Again, they're trying to expand the exemptions for legal abortion in Indiana. They're also coming up with creative ways to get people sexual health care. This month, All Options teamed up with the Midwest Action Coalition and Indiana Task Force to install an emergency contraception vending machine. It's located at the rear of a general store called Dear Mom on Indianapolis's Near East Side, a neighborhood where one in every four people lives in poverty. Besides emergency contraception, the hand-painted machine holds all kinds of sexual health supplies, condoms, dental dams, and pregnancy tests.
My grandmother is from Kentucky.
They posted a launch party for it. In one video posted to social media, a group of about 25 gathers in the store.
Your new best friend.
And as they chat, a woman in a red t-shirt pushes a button in the vending machine while her friend records. A small green Plan B box drops. The woman reaches through the door flap, pulls out the box, and poses, smiling for her friend. Projects like this are hyper-local, and Jess says continuing to support local abortion funds is more important than ever.
Someone who is a strong supporter of All Options and has been for years as a donor and supporter and advocate messaged me on Facebook, I think, when it was announced that the ban was going to take effect. And she was basically like, hey, do you have any recommendations on where I should donate my money now since you won't be able to do anything? And I was like, wait. The only thing that has changed is that we're not helping people. We're generally not helping people access abortions in Indiana.
In Indiana. You're referring them out.
Yeah. There's nothing that prevents us from paying for a Hoosier to get an abortion in any of the legal states.
What do you think that people can be doing to help folks get access to abortion or to advocate for it in a red state like Indiana or in a state like Mississippi?
There are things people can do. I do think generally if people are able to donate dollars, donating to grassroots organizations who are actively working in advocacy and access is really important. Like specifically within Indiana, donating to someone like All Options, it makes a real impact. Like I get a $50 donation from a local person, and I can imagine a larger organization being like, oh, $50. I'm like, oh, $50. I can buy 2 cases of diapers. You know, like I know exactly where that money is going to go to, and I can picture the family that it's going to go to, or, you know, to abortion funding, which is sort of this never-ending stream of need. People will continue to get pregnant and not want to be so. And so really donating to any organization that is in the fight for access and making abortion more accessible to all people is something I'll always advocate for. Likewise, donating time to any of organizations like All Options, Keep Our Clinics, even I Need an A. I think they have some different volunteer opportunities, and those sites are vital in helping people access care.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. What else should people know about abortion access right now in Indiana?
I think the refrain that I've been sort of broadcasting for the last 18 months is, first, don't give up hope. You can get an abortion. It's not just us. There are teams of people who are here to help people get the care they need and deserve, whatever that is. So I don't want people to feel like that sense of confusion, disinformation, and misinformation. Don't let that keep you from exercising your rights and your choices and your agency as a human being. But it's also okay to be angry and to say, this is not okay. And I want my lawmakers to know this. I want my lawmakers to know that they acted specifically against the desires of the people of Indiana mm-hmm. when they enacted this ban. And I think people need to continue to vote and to contact their legislators to express how they feel about this, to say that the state of Indiana is actively repressing people's ability to fully live lives. And that goes for people who are having abortions or need abortions, and for people who are parents, which, you know, there's a big intersection there. We live in a state that is making it too difficult, too costly, too emotionally costly to fully embody our lives and to raise families. And that's not okay. And our lawmakers need to know that. So, hope, but also rage.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Jessica. And I'm going to try to keep it moving.
Keep it moving. That's what we got to do.
Yeah.
Thank you. It was really good to reconnect.
You too. Take it easy.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm Amy Gastelum. You've been listening to Making Contact. If you learned something in this episode today, I'm going to ask that you pass it on. Most of our listeners live on the coasts in states where abortion care is easier to access. If you want to share this story with your Midwest and Southern networks, go to our website, radioproject.org, where you can find a link to this show and share it. You can always find us on social media. We'll see you there. And thanks.
The Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office, SVSPO, offers confidential support, advice, and referrals to SFU and FIC community members, including students, staff, and faculty, who have been impacted by sexual violence and misconduct. The SVSPO is a welcoming place where you can access support without judgment or assumptions. We work from a survivor-centered perspective, using an empowerment and trauma-informed approach that considers individual situations and perspectives. Please reach out. Services are located at the Diamond Alumni Center, room 014 on the lower level. Please reach out by email at sv-support@sfu.ca. That was sv-support@sfu.ca.